This is the SMB Community Podcast, the longest-running MSP-focused podcast in the industry.
I'm James Kernan. My background's IT sales, marketing, and leadership, and most recently, M&A advisory services.
And I'm Amy Babinchak. I help MSPs run stronger, more profitable firms from a tech-first perspective.
Here, you'll find practical insights for MSPs and IT service providers. Powered by Small Biz Thoughts.
Well, hey, we've got a couple really good questions of the week that came in. So we're going to talk about those a little bit more than what's in the news, because I think in the news is a little boring this week. So I think, why don't we jump into that? The first question that came in is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. But it says, how can I improve the business conversation with my customers? So how can I improve the business conversation with my customers? So what comes to mind on that, Amy?
What comes to mind on that is being an introvert.
Yep.
You know, that's me. And but yeah, I run into so many people there that are afraid of that business conversation. Yeah. Because they're tech people, right? Most of us who got into this industry and started an MSP came at it from the tech world.
Yeah.
And so you're used to looking at a problem, solving a problem. You know, strategy for techs involves, you know, how often do I have to replace this computer? Or how do I not disrupt somebody's work while we're doing an upgrade, right? To them, that's strategy. And then you ask them to step into a business meeting and they don't know what to say. So yeah, I feel ya. And, you know, I have the introvert thing. I tell people all the time, it being an introvert isn't 100% quiet all the time. You know, you've seen me up there speaking. I can do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, famously, I can't order a pizza over the phone. just can't do it. It causes me a ridiculous amount of anxiety, and it sounds stupid, but it's real.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think a lot of people in this industry are introverts.
Yeah.
And, you know, here you are coming to the conference room of your client. So you're in a environment you're not entirely comfortable with, talking to business people who you may have struggled talking with before because they don't get technology, right? So how do you bridge all of that? It's complicated. I mean, I've developed a system for it. James, you probably come at this from a totally other point of view, because salespeople are typically not introverts.
True. But, you know, speaking in public is a real fear. You know, it's, I think, the number two most feared thing in the world, just behind death. So, there's obviously a lot of self-conscious people out there, but I had to fight through it. It was hard for me as well as an extrovert that, you know, one-on-one, it was easier, but the bigger the group got, the harder it was. And, you know, and it's like that. I remember early in my career, and I think I did a good job of this only because I was called on super spontaneously. But I remember walking in my first job in technology with the branch manager of one of our locations. And he walked in and saw there were 15 people in the room. And he turned around and just looked at me and said, "Hey, James, I can't run the meeting. I just can't do this." I was like, "What?" And I wasn't prepared, but I knew what we were going to talk about. And so I just did it. And the meeting went really well. But my friend, who was the branch manager of our company, you know, I felt really bad for him, because it's speaking in public is a real deal. And whether it's one-on-one or one-to-many, you know, practice makes perfect. And the one thing I'll say that helped me early on was, number one, find something in common that you have as a human being. That's what social media is so awesome about. So if you know where they went to college, or they know something about their family, you know, get them talking about things that they love. And they'll start opening up, and then it kind of just the anxiety leaves the room, and then you can start having a conversation. I also, you know, when I was in college, I was a finance major, an accounting major. So I always liked looking at ROI and looking at the numbers. Does this make sense or not? And so I was always really comfortable with those conversations as well. So I try to find things in common. I try to have more of a numbers conversation of the impact on the business and does this make sense financially? So those were things that helped me early on get more and more comfortable with other business owners. But yeah. So what, tell us a little bit about your process.
Well, you know, a little bit like you, right? I try to start off with trying to break the ice in the room, really trying to make myself more comfortable and, and maybe them, but I'm worried more about me. So trying to make myself a little bit come more comfortable, right? So if I'm in a conference room and there's, framed pictures of hockey players or football, or a lot of conference rooms tend to have stuff like that in it, pictures of boating, whatever it is, I'll usually make a comment on them, like, oh, you know, you guys are big Red Wings fans, I didn't realize that. And oh my god, you know, that'll, I don't have to know much about the sport, but you know, that'll get them talking about it, like, oh, you know, this is my favorite player, you know, since I was a kid, blah blah blah. They'll start talking about that, and I will listen engagedly, but and so that just sort of helps to lighten the room a little bit.
Absolutely.
That's like step one. And then, you know, then I'll ask them, like, well, you know, how are things going around here? How's it in your business? You know, if depending what the economy is doing, right, you should probably know that in general, right? What's the local and national economy doing? Like, you know, hey, you know, that, you know, I hear that there's a lot of economic growth out there. Are you guys growing? How's it going? And that's their wheelhouse, right? So that, again, will get them started talking, like, oh yeah, you know, things are going pretty good. And, yeah, we might, in fact, we might be hiring four more people. Yeah. Boom. Now we're in my wheelhouse. Oh, really? You're going to be hired? When do you think that's going to happen? Yeah. You know, what departments are you looking at expanding? Right. So, that means we're going to need to get a few more computers in here. And, you know, the prices of memory and storage are going way up. Right. We all been hearing that story because of AI. We should probably get those ordered sooner than later, because I can tell you the price is going nowhere than up. So if you're confident that you guys are growing, which is awesome, we should probably get that done. So my thing is, once you get them talking about their business, that will immediately translate into you talking about how you can utilize their IT investments to support what they're doing.
Right.
Right. We are the support people. So, you know, your business is expanding. Oh, you're looking at possibly moving to a new building. I mean, I might bring that up because that tends to be a thing that gets sprung on you sometimes. Yeah. This place is going to be really full. Are you guys looking at, you know, adding an office or moving to a bigger space? You know, so that they know then that they should be talking to you about those things.
Exactly.
So every business conversation translates into how you can support them, right? They have hopes and dreams for their business. They have intentions and plans for the business. Here's how you can support it. What I think really gives a lot of IT people anxiety is thinking that they have to come to the table with the business conversation. I don't think you do. You have to come to the table willing to listen to them tell you about what's happening in the business. You will immediately respond with, this is how we can help you.
Yeah. And statistically, you know, effective meetings with customers or prospects you should only be talking no more than 40% of the time, you, the business owner. You need to be asking good probing questions. The customer is the one who's supposed to be talking the majority of the time. Okay. So that's an excellent point, Amy.
Yeah. When you are talking, though, make sure that it's not all about selling them stuff. Right. So that might be our tendency. And the example that I just used was part of that. But, you know, in knowing the different departments, you can remind them of investments that they've already made. Like, oh, yeah, we've already got some tools in place that'll be able to help with that. Those people are going to come in incrementally at, you know, really low cost because of this stuff that we did ahead of time to prepare.
Yeah.
So you've got IT people have, as IT business owners, we have that ability to have those conversations. We are still the support role, right? We're not there to tell them how to run their business. We're there to help them reach their goals, their hopes, their dreams.
Yep. The other thing I'll say is I think it's important, have some good probing questions, get them talking about what they love talking about. Hopefully, you know, you'll be able to figure that out before the meeting or just as you get going. The other part I would just say is you need to come in prepared. I'm old fashioned. I like having an agenda. And then I would always attach a copy of the agenda to my meeting invite when I would send that out to a customer. Yeah, especially if it's a prospect, you know, so they know, you know, how much time's allotted, what the topics are, and then you can kind of navigate around that. But at least for me, I had fear of public speaking for sure early in my career. I felt more prepared that I had a structure and I had, you know, my probing questions written down in my notebook, not on the agenda. And then I would have the other agenda items that I would really easily be able to follow through to make sure I, you know, covered everything that I wanted to cover. So, that helps as well. That helps as well.
This episode is supported by the Small Biz Thoughts technology community. Small Biz Thoughts is designed for IT service providers who already know the technical work and want to get more intentional about how they run their business. The community focuses on the operational side of managed services, things like service agreements, pricing, process design, and the day-to-day decisions that determine whether an MSP scales cleanly or stays reactive. Members have access to a deep library of practical resources, but more importantly, they're part of ongoing conversations with peers who are actively running services businesses and willing to compare notes on what's working. It's deliberately practical, deliberately focused, and built around helping MSPs make better business decisions over time. If you want to see how the community works, you can find the details at smallbizthoughts.org.
So the second question that came in that I thought was really good, I wanted to spend a little time talking about that today as well, is are MSAs critical to have with my customer? And boy, that question really resonates with me. It seems like every other business owner that I talk to that's, on the business sale side, that, hey, I'm getting ready to sell my business and I ask a series of questions. And it seems like 50% of them don't have a contract at all or their contract is terrible. And I would always say, yes, it is really important to have one, but you have to have the right stuff in it. So what are some quick thoughts that come to mind on that topic?
Well, I mean, I have the same experience that you do when I talk to people that are getting ready to sell their business. One of the tasks that you have to do is gather all of your contracts up.
Right.
Is the buyer's going to want to see those? And not having a contract makes the buyers uncomfortable. So you do need a contract. I've also seen a few, not many, because like you, it is 50-50. I've seen a few MSAs that are really complicated.
Yeah, overcomplicated.
Overcomplicated. And that makes me nervous too, because the thing with a contract is you have to adhere to the terms. So if your contract terms are very complicated and you do something outside of that as you know, you change your operating procedures and suddenly you're doing something that you didn't say you were going to do, or you're not doing something you said you were going to do in that MSA, then that's grounds for making that contract invalid if something really does go south and you end up in a legal situation. Yeah. So I like to have a thorough but simple MSA. You know, we've got some brilliant legal advisors in this industry that decided to specialize here. Mm-hmm. I think they can make things pretty complicated. So, you know, remember that you do have a say in what that ultimately looks like. But the goal here is to protect yourself from liabilities that might occur based on, you know, operations, right? Clients definitely have the view that you're the person in charge of IT, even if I'm only, you know, paying you a pittance compared to what I would be paying a full-time IT department. Somehow they think they should assign all the liability to you. So the MSA, it's important that the liability stay with the client where it's appropriate. You know, the other piece is really just to set those expectations.
Yeah.
I prefer to do it in a pretty simplistic, non-specific sort of way, right? But, you know, also to make it clear that, hey, we're not eyes on you all the time because we're not in your office. So we don't see everything that's happening. Our tools allow us to see a lot of what's happening. Mm-hmm. We don't see everything. And both sides of the equation need to recognize that. That's part of your contract as well. So yeah, you got to have one. Keep it simple. Yeah. Keep it enforceable. Make sure it's understood well by both parties.
Yeah, I think they're important for all the same reasons you said, Amy. And I'll start with kind of the last part that you said of keep it simple. But, you know, what are the expectations? You know, what's the pricing? What's the term? How are you going to bill them and when? You know, what's your responsibilities? What's their responsibilities? Just the basic information so we know how to do business together. That's really important. Regardless of the relationship you have with the business owner, in many cases, it's a good one. You know, but there's always a lot of turnover, and then time goes by, and maybe there's a new owner or a new point of contact, and they've merged with another company, and you know that's why those agreements are so important that you've got in place.
They actually give you time to rebuild that relationship too. So this is probably a mistake that I made in my business. I tended to favor short-term auto-renewing contracts as opposed to the three-year, five-year, you know, sort of things, which have become fairly common in our industry.
Right.
The advantage of the longer-term contract is that because it's harder for the client to exit, it does give you more time to rebuild relationships when the turnover occurs. So, you know, many times, like you said, you know, high-level staff will exit for some reason. And that was your major point of contact, right? That's the person that you met with that brought you in. Now they're not there. You don't have your champion anymore.
Yeah.
And you need that. It takes some months to rebuild that relationship again. And the longer term contract can give you that time to do so.
Yep. Exactly. And it's really important just to kind of in writing, scope out what you're responsible for, what you're supporting, what you're responsible for, because there's all sorts of scope creep. There's more and more liability that's being pushed legally away from the customer and onto the MSP. And that's critical. I got to tell you a quick funny story. The first MSP or first tech company that I worked for, we had the owner rolled out. I want everybody to sign a professional services agreement. All new customers will sign a professional services agreement, and then we'll do an addendum for each project that we do. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. And then, you know, the young buck sales, all the salespeople grabbed the agreements. It was 26 pages long, I remember it was 26 pages long. I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I need a law degree just to understand half of what's in this agreement.
Yeah, and you got to have like 2 hours, a 2 hour meeting just to explain it to the customer. And then we're going to add an addendum onto it for this project. Oh my God.
And that's when I learned, you know, there's agreements that help you sell and there's agreements that hurt. You know, we called them sales hurdles. This is a sales hurdle. You know, this is going to be an obstacle for us to close the deal. And so, you know, clearly it has to be a compromise. But the one thing I'm going to give props out to Rob Scott's organization, Monjour, M-O-N-J-U-R. I've run into those guys a few years back at one of our mastermind events, and they've come into our community and helped a lot of our members. But they offer a service. So they're MSP attorneys, just like Amy was hinting at. There's really good, talented MSP-focused attorneys. Well, these guys had a great idea, and they came up with contracts as a service. And so for a flat fee per month, and they've got all sorts of integrations with the quoting tools and the PSA tools, but they've got all the current legalese, and it changes almost daily, right? They've got that contract kind of that's linked to all of your proposals. And, you know, it's simple, it's to the point, but with how AI is changing our industry so rapidly, and there's more and more MSPs absorbing that responsibility, like I was just talking about, the liability. It's really important to have strong language that will protect you in your agreements. Hopefully it's not 26 pages long, but it needs to be you know, written by MSP attorneys to with the right lingo to make it simple and to protect really both parties, but you specifically. Right. So check those guys out. That's a great thing to do if you haven't heard of them.
Yeah, you know, AI is probably a good reason to revisit your contract. There's a lot of new things coming in. You know, there's a lot of shadow IT happening, shadow AI happening. They're bringing in and beginning to use tools that have not been vetted, that have significant privacy concerns, and they don't realize it. Something goes sideways, they're going to say, oh gosh, what? IT, you know, how come you didn't prevent that from happening? Excuse me. So, that's a good reason to revisit that, because as technology changed so rapidly, we're always on the back foot on this stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. You know, the ransomware guys, the security issues, they're always ahead of the defenders. It's just the nature of things, right? They're incentivized to iterate and change all the time, and we try to anticipate what that's going to be and try to keep up, but it's not possible, and that has to be acknowledged by both parties.
And speaking of you know, security concerns, in the news earlier this month there was a big hack that kind of, I didn't hear too much about it, but PAX 8 was in the news. They had gotten hacked and exposed a lot of client information out there. So
they did a good job at keeping that quiet. They really did, you know. And in the article that you know, Business of Tech had or cited, that the information's already been sold too.
Yeah.
So it's your internal business information that they got access to. So is it super critical? You know, it's not like social security numbers and stuff like that, but it's what you're buying, how often you're buying, what your terms are. That stuff is still valuable. So you might find some salespeople in the future that already know a lot of information about you, giving them a leg up, you know, on negotiations and stuff, and that can cost you real money. So the these kinds of leaks are important. Hey, the other thing that was in the news that's a little repetitive, but we should probably mention it, is the continued high prices and scarcity of memory and storage.
Yeah.
And of course, that's due to all these AI expansions in data centers. They're sucking it all up. They're getting preferred shipments. We're not getting those preferred shipments. But manufacturers are. So. Right. When you buy devices, you know, the only way you have to fight against this is to buy devices that have the storage and memory that the client's going to need for the life of that device. This has been my thought on how devices should be purchased for a very long time. But a lot of folks try to get in at the lowest price point, and then, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line say, oh, if we can keep this computer for another year or two if we put in some more memory. That's not a viable model anymore, because purchasing small amounts of memory are very, very expensive. And this isn't a short-term problem. This is going to be a long-term problem. So don't skimp when you buy your new devices. Make sure they're going to last for the five-year expectation that you probably have for that device.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, I think that's about it for the SMB Community Podcast. Hey, if you've got a question of the week, we'd love to hear from you. Go ahead and send it over to james@kernanconsulting.com or hit us up on the website, smbcommunitypodcast.com. All right. Well, Amy, thanks again for your time. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see everybody next time.
Thank you for listening and or watching. Remember, Dave breaks down the IT news of the day on his show, The Business of Tech, which drops at 5 p.m. Eastern, Mondays through Fridays, with bonus content on the weekends.
Watching this on YouTube? Be sure to like and subscribe so you always know you've got our latest episode. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to use the contact form on the SMB Community Podcast webpage. That's smbcommunitypodcast.com. Or leave your comments on our YouTube episode page. Produced by Picture This Video. Part of the MSP Radio Network.